Welcome to the Drexel Medcast, your source for health information from leading academic experts at Drexel University College of Medicine. I'm Stacia DeMarco. Today, we're joined by Dr. Carol Lippa, professor of neurology and director of the Memory Disorders Program at Drexel University College of Medicine. Dr. Lippa, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here with you today.
We want to talk today about Alzheimer's disease. This is something that affects so many people and families. How common is it?
This is a very common problem. There are about 5 million Americans currently who have Alzheimer's disease. The estimates are projected to go up to 15 million by the year 2050 if we don't find a good intervention for Alzheimer's. So it's a big problem now, and I think you'll find it bigger in the future.
There's been a lot of news lately about predictions that the number of people with Alzheimer's is going to skyrocket in the next 20 to 50 years. Why is that?
Well, it's a combination of factors. Some are good and some are bad. The good news is that we're finding better cures for diabetes, cancers, hypertension, and a lot of the other health problems of the elderly. So people are living longer, and age is the biggest risk factor for Alzheimer's. So a lot of the increase in the number of people just relates to the fact that people are getting older and living longer. The other thing is that the baby boomers are now coming into the age of risk for Alzheimer's disease. And that's another big wave of people that'll again increase our elderly population. Here in Pennsylvania, we have the second highest number of elderly people. We're second right to Florida, so it's particularly prevalent here.
I understand early onset is a focus of some of your research. Is it possible to diagnose Alzheimer's earlier, or can doctors and researchers predict who might be at risk?
Well, about 20% of our patients are what we call early onset, which is having symptoms of memory loss when they're under 60 years of age. And sometimes in those people it's Alzheimer's, and sometimes it's other forms of memory loss. And we're getting better and better at diagnosing the condition early. There are testing things that can be done in the office. There's more elaborate mental testing that can be done by our neuropsychologists. And we have imaging studies, MRI studies, metabolic studies, and other kind of blood or biochemical studies that can be done to try and help establish the diagnosis regardless of the age of the individual.
We generally think of Alzheimer's as an old person's disease. Can it affect young people?
Absolutely, and that's something that's being recognized more and more. My youngest patient with Alzheimer's disease was 38 years old when I'd made the diagnosis. There are other people that have had patients even in their 20s with Alzheimer's disease, and it isn't that uncommon in people under 60. Usually in those cases, there's some type of a family history where the disease runs and has an early onset in other members. So it's unlikely to occur in a 30-year-old if there's no one else in the family who has Alzheimer's, but if it runs in the family, then the onset could be that early.
We hear talk about keeping your mind active. Does that help? Is there really anything a person can do to prevent or delay Alzheimer's?
There's a lot of research now on keeping your mind and your body active, both, and a lot of work showing in animals, for instance, animals that have a boring cage and they kind of just sit there and do nothing but eat and drink, don't have as strong brain cells, as robust connections between the brain cells and the thinking cells as animals that have like a fun cage with all sorts of gymnastics and activities and little puzzles to work on. And we see that in people as well. Studies show that if you keep your mind active by challenging it mentally, you do better as far as maintaining your mental abilities than people who don't. And the good news is, you know, you don't need to do calculus or anything hard or anything that you don't like. You can really remain challenged with almost anything that you enjoy doing mentally, and it can even be a social type of thing. So that's good, but physical activity is also really good. There are positive effects of physical activity on blood sugar and on all kinds of proteins and chemical substances in your body that help to maintain the brain. And the more you work out, you know, the healthier your brain is. In fact, right now we're doing a study looking at a diabetes medicine for Alzheimer's disease, you know, to maintain things. So, you know, the exercise, it helps your blood sugar and it helps insulin resistance and other things that are important for your overall health as well as the health of your brain cells. So that either physical exercise or mental exercise or optimally both can really help with stabilizing memory losses, and a lot of things in general that are good for your heart are good for your brain. You've likely heard that, you know, a healthy diet with, you know, avoiding a lot of junk food and a lot of fat and cholesterol is good for the heart. Well, the same things are good for the brain, as is the physical activity and the, you know, weight, you know, proper weight maintenance.
Dr. Lippa, there are so many over-the-counter supplements that claim to either boost memory or help with memory loss. What do you recommend?
Well, that is common. I have a lot of patients and caregivers who come up to me and they're either giving their loved one ginkgo or vitamin E or a number of other antioxidants or supplements, and they want to know if they're helpful at all. And a lot of them really haven't been shown to do anything. One problem is that they haven't been that widely studied always, but some of them have been studied. For example, vitamin E has been studied, and it shows to not do so much. One study showed it might help a little bit, and then another study showed people actually did worse. So overall, none of the supplements have really been shown to do anything on a large scale. Now, there are studies that are in progress, so some of them may prove to be useful, but most of them thus far have been negative. There's another problem, though, with supplements, is that they're not regulated by the government for things like purity and potency, and there are no laws, you know, governing shelf life for them. So when you buy a supplement, an over-the-counter supplement, you have no idea of what's in it, how pure it is, and even if it contains much of what you think you're buying. So most of the time, I recommend that people not buy them. The last problem with them is that sometimes they can interact. For example, a lot of them have blood-thinning properties, and I've seen patients actually come in with brain hemorrhages or serious bleeding problems because their loved ones, with all the best intentions in the world, will buy them a whole, you know, variety of different types of these supplements, and each one has blood thinning effects, and cumulatively they have the person so thin, their blood so thin, they actually have bleeding complications. So they actually can do harm, and there are FDA approved treatments to stabilize and help with the symptoms of Alzheimer's, both the behavioral problems that the patients have and the cognitive problems, the memory problems. So it's best to start with them and to be very cautious about the supplements that people take.
Talk to us about the work you do at the Memory Disorder Center here at Drexel.
Well, we're doing a number of things. Our clinical program here is quite large, and we see a number of patients with Alzheimer's as well as other conditions. We see more and more people with milder forms of memory loss. I mentioned before that the baby boomers are getting into the age of risk, and a baby boomer is not willing to accept memory loss. They don't want to lose one IQ point for anything, and it's completely unacceptable. And, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, we used to see a lot of Alzheimer's disease patients, but now about a third of the patients we see don't meet criteria for dementia at all. They're getting a little forgetful, and either they're a little embarrassed or they're afraid they're going to mess up, or they have to, you know, leave too many reminders, or they have some other type of cognitive change that's more subtle. And one of the good things is, you know, now if it is something on the way to Alzheimer's, our medicines can perhaps work better, you know, the earlier they're started. And if there are other health problems that are causing the symptoms, they can also be better treated when it's noted early. So we always encourage people to come in when they have what we call mild cognitive impairment or just a little bit of forgetfulness rather than dementia. We see a lot of Alzheimer's patients, and we see other types of dementia as well, people with memory problems from strokes or from trauma or from, you know, other problems with the nervous system. I mentioned earlier that we're also doing a number of clinical trials, which is a big part of our memory program here. We're doing two studies looking at blood sugar medicines, as I mentioned before, to see if they help stabilize symptoms or improve symptoms in patients with Alzheimer's. We're also doing studies for related problems in patients with dementia, and we're looking at several other studies for the future that may also help to alter the course or the disease in Alzheimer's patients. The second component is the lab component of the program, where we're doing research trying to better understand what causes Alzheimer's disease so that we can find ways to prevent it. One of the PhDs, Dr. Yusong Gong, in my lab is looking at things that might lead to a vaccine for Alzheimer's disease, and we're doing a lot of research work characterizing abnormal proteins and processes that underlie the disease in Alzheimer's. again, with an eye for early intervention or prevention of the disease. And it's a really exciting time because, you know, again, 10 years ago, you would have thought, well, you know, kind of call a nursing home. And now we have a lot in clinical trials and nationally, there are many, many agents being looked at that could alter the disease. And I think within a few years, we'll have really meaningful ways of preventing or stabilizing people with the disease.
Caring for a person with Alzheimer's is so difficult for loved ones and family members. What help is out there for them?
There's a lot more than there used to be. As far as making the diagnosis, you know, the best thing to do is to see a physician. And if you want to see a specialist, you can always call us here at the clinic. But you could also start with, you know, your primary care doctor and see if you get peace of mind at that level. So medically, that's the first thing. We're lucky enough to have Dr. Beth Gonzalez, who's a PhD in the School of Nursing here at Drexel. Her number is 215-762-8331. And she has an NIH grant to do research in caregiver issues. And basically, this is a program that provides free educational information to family caregivers of patients with Alzheimer's disease. So if you're caring for either a friend or family member with Alzheimer's, but you feel like you're having trouble managing things at home, yet are committed to keeping the patient at home, you could try calling Dr. Gonzalez at 762-8331 for this program, which is free because it's NIH funded. All costs are covered. We also have a great Alzheimer's Association regionally in the Delaware Valley. I'm a chair of their Medical Science Committee. Their number is 1-800-272-3900, and that's a, you know, 24/7 number for caregivers. If you need lists of nursing homes and things like that, you can get it from them. And then here we have a clinical trials unit. We're always looking for patients for clinical trials for Alzheimer's and other types of dementia and memory loss. And the number for that is 215-762-7783.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lippa. And if you would like more information about the Memory Disorders Program at Drexel University College of Medicine, or if you'd like to make an appointment with Dr. Lippa, call 215-762-6917 or visit drexelmed.edu/memory. And join us for the next Drexel Medcast at drexelmed.edu.